Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Tass of Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. You know, when I began this video project about 10 years ago, I thought I'd have vanity. I thought I'd have makeup every night like Garceau did back in the 90s at Channel 2. But, I decided not to shave because I feel like it's All-Star Break week. This guy's been out on vacation all week. I'm going to have to shave because I'm going to have to clean up because I'm going out to Eldridgeburg to 1623 Brewing on Wednesday. I'm really looking forward to the show on Wednesday, as well as Friday morning. We're going to be at Zeke's Coffee in Lauraville. Luke is back from vacation. He has a tan. I look 20 years older because I haven't shaved in a month. I don't think I've shaved since Wang Chung. It's been some winning, been some losing, been some Marlins, been some Mets. But I'll tell you one thing for sure, dude, and the thing with the last place team and watching how horrible the broadcast have devolved into pandering and all of that. We're on the trade deadline. I'll just say this about the team. About once a week, maybe twice a week, they get really embarrassed. You know what I mean? Like, this has been an embarrassing year just at the All-Star break and last place and where they are, and you can feel good or bad about it. But they sure do use a lot of position players to pitch. They almost get no hit a lot. They run the bases like a little league team. I don't know. You didn't miss much being gone the last 10 days, even though they pick up a game or two maybe. They won a couple of games in the middle of the week.
Well, I mean, let's not downplay it. They won 6 of 7 at one point, and you go into Saturday of the Marlins series, and I think I even wrote this, 3 weeks ago, I guess it was, when I looked at the final 6 series before the All-Star break, and I was trying to figure out a somewhat realistic, even if I wasn't necessarily believing that was going to happen, but a realistic path to say, okay, this is kind of what needs to happen if they're still kind of sort of in wild card content, or let me rephrase that. If they're kind of sort of hanging on the fringe of wild card contention, and then they come out of the second half and they have a good 10 days. And then you say, all right, what does the trade deadline look like then? They're not certainly not going all in as buyers. There was never a scenario like that, but you could at least argue against selling off everything that isn't nailed to the floor as far as, you know, talking about
staying the course would be the word, right?
And I looked at that and it was 12-6, right? It was winning 2 out of 3 of your last 6, you know, 2 out of 3 in each of your last 6 series. And if they had swept the Marlins, then they would have finished 12-6 over that stretch. Unfortunately, Saturday, they've wasted a great start from Trevor Rogers, who, especially in the aftermath of Kyle Stowers doing what he did on Sunday, you're at least happy with where Trevor Rogers is. I mean, I know it's only been 6 starts. He's been their best starting pitcher. He's been that good, and that's been a positive development.
Evan Brown wanted to send him to the All-Star game in the middle of the broadcast
on
Sunday.
Let's pump the brakes.
I mean, Jesus.
Like that,
I mean, at that point, you might as well just be doing Saturday. You might as well be Gordon Solie.
I think that had to do with the app. That had more to do with the context of the rookie pitcher for the Brewers that's going to the All-Star game after, 5 starts, which is, you know, that's where the genesis of that really was. But anyway, you look at this team, and I kind of go back to what I've been saying for several weeks now. Are they playing better than they did when they had a 7-23 stretch, which in the tail end of that is when Brandon Hyde was fired and Mancelino takes the job as interim manager? They've been better than that since then. They absolutely have been. But the problem is, when you start like that, when you have a record where you're 18 games under 500 going into Memorial Day weekend, what do you think you're going to be the rest of the year, right? I mean, just because you're 18 games under through the first 7 or 8 weeks of the season, even if you like a team's potential or like their talent or you're chalking it up to injuries or whatever, it doesn't mean that the pendulum swings in the opposite direction and you're going to go 18 over in the next 7 weeks, right?
Well, you go 10 over and you still don't feel good about yourself.
And that's the thing. So you look at this team, the very simple breakdown is this. They started 9-11. They had the absolute debacle on Easter Sunday, which started their stretch of going 7-23, which is Colorado Rockies-like, which is 2018 through 21 Orioles like, and they buried themselves at that point at 16-34. And since then, they've gone 27-18. Now, I will point out, because this was thing something that was a pet peeve of mine that we were hearing the last 3, 4 weeks. Remember, they had that stretch where they won 9 of 11. That included their 6-game winning streak. Problem is, after they won 9 of 11, and at that point they were 11 games under 500 going into that Sacramento, the A's series
After
in
St.
Sacramento.
Louis, they beat up on
Yeah,
the
that was
Cardinals,
June
right? Yeah.
5th or whatever it was. They've gone 18 and 16 since then. That 9-2 stretch needed to be their springboard to just take off and be great. That's what they needed to do if they were really going to get back into this thing. And instead, it hasn't been horrible, but it's been middling. It's been 500-ish. And I think where I am with this team right now, as far as what I think they are from a true talent level standpoint, from a true performance level standpoint right now, beyond just looking at what the record is and they're 9 games under 500, mathematically they're buried. I think they're right now more of a 500-ish kind of a team in terms of how they've performed. And the problem is, you can't erase that 7-23 stretch. You can't erase being 18 games under 500 on May 24th. And it just goes back to what we said at that point in time. They buried themselves, and they haven't been able to get off the mat to the degree that they've needed to do anything but sell at the trade deadline. And I think these last 2 games, to bring it back to the here and now, what happened on Saturday, where I listened to the game my entire way home from the beach, and they had a chance to win. Trevor Rogers pitched great, and then the bullpen falters late, but they didn't score any runs. I mean, they're shut out. And then on Sunday, I mean, they just nothing went well,
How many
right?
times
And
they've been shut out? How many times you scored less than 3 runs? It's
too
insane, right?
much, too much. I mean, that's what you heard me complaining about through the first 7 weeks of the season, where I was just like, hey, look, I expected the starting rotation to struggle, especially if you're going to tell me Eflin was on the IL in addition to Grayson Rodriguez.
Well, Rogers has been saved their lunch this month.
Rodgers has been great. Charlie Morton's been excellent for the last 5 or 6 weeks, right? I mean, again, I'm not giving him a pass on what happened the first 6 weeks of his season, but he's been really good since then. And Dean Kramer's been way more good than bad since the first month of the season. Problem is, Sagano's gone the wrong way. Eflin, who began a rehab assignment Sunday, but we know how that's gone for him. And you've had Brandon Young making starts because Cade Povich has been on the IL. So, of late, they've had three starting pitchers that have given them a good chance to win. But going back to your point, you still see these, I don't know if you want to call them lapses or whatever. They go through times where they'll play well, like they did this past week, where they won 6 of 7. And then you see what happens on Saturday and Sunday. Some defensive miscues, some base running miscues. They didn't swing the bats well. They didn't pitch well. Going back to the seventh inning on Saturday, and certainly all day Sunday. That to me sounds like a 500 team, right? I mean, team that's going to play well at times and is going to be not so good at times, right? And it adds up to
Their
where
pitching's
they.
not good enough to be an above
I
500
mean,
team,
really,
and
it's
their hitting
not.
hasn't been consistent enough
I was
either.
just going to say, none of it's really been consistent enough to be any more than what it's been since the 3rd week of May, which is a couple games over 500. Since then, it's been better, but has it been anything that has meaningfully changed their trajectory? I mean, unless we're speaking looking through the lens of trying to avoid 100 losses, they were on that kind of a pace for a long time. Okay, great. Whoop-de-doo. You're not throwing a parade over that, and you're certainly not in any kind of a position other than what they need to do. And they started doing that when they dealt Brian Baker late last week. Sell. They need to sell. This isn't a fire sale, looking at it like 2018 or anything like that, but pending free agents need to be traded. I mean, a big thing that is a pet peeve of mine right now when I look at this ball club is how little Kobe Mayo is playing. I mean, what are we doing? And I heard Tony Mancelino's answer on Sunday, where he's talking about they're in win now mode. I mean, you would think that their lineup's the 27 Yankees, the way that he framed that. There's no excuse not to get Kobe Mayo more playing time, and if that means, well, Ryan O'Hearn's going to be dealt to a contender, and that's going to help open up playing time for Kobe Mayo, because you need to find out about him over the next 2.5 months, then so be it. And the same's going to be said about Samuel Basayo.
Well, this sell-off could be something this week, right? I mean, like, in a general sense, fans get their feelings hurt. We go back to BJ Surhoff 25 years ago or whatever, but Like they're in a really weird spot. Like anything that's not glued down, that's not under 20. I mean, they dealt Baker, and people are on me on my Facebook. Like I care about Brian Baker. I care about relief innings next year. And if you think he is not good enough, then deal him. If you think you could do better than that in your bullpen, well, I've seen Soto, I've seen Dominguez, I've seen Kittredge. I know Kimbrel. I know what they cost. I know what 48 innings of relief pitching looks like in the offseason when you're thinking, oh, we need a middle relief pitcher. We'll just get a guy from Quad A. No, we won't. Baker had sort of graduated a little bit in that case. And to deal him off for a future, what it told me is Mike Elias thinks he's keeping his job. It tells me that Mike Elias is going to be running this team next March when you're let in Sarasota and I'm locked out in Sarasota by these clowns. And last place clowns, by the way, I can throw that back in again. It's not that I wouldn't have dealt him. It just tell it's tea leaving me to say, unlike the Washington Nationals, who poop canned their GM 3 days before they drafted, which was that was a little weird, but the Lerner family's every bit as weird as the Rubenstein family. And they've been at it longer, and they've got a pelt. And they've made a lot of money, and they've been screwed out of a lot of money by Angelos. But the notion that Elias is going to pick all the players on Sunday, deal off everybody in 2 weeks, and that, I mean, look, I don't know what Rubenstein's management's techniques are or whatever, but it certainly feels like Elias feels emboldened that he will be the architect. He's going to survive this 2, 3 years from now. He's going to pick the next manager. And that if you're dealing off for 37 number 37 draft picks, early second round draft picks, and you're dealing off bullpen pieces with controllable years, it says to me that you think you're in the cockpit for a while. You're buying green bananas, as they say.
Well, I mean, first of all, I mean, we can't make Brian Baker out to be more than what he was, right? This isn't someone that's been a stalwart for 4 years in their bullpen. This is a guy that we wondered if he was going to make the club out of spring training, right? So he had an excellent first 3 months of the season. He absolutely was as important as important can be through looking through the lens of it being a last place team. But we also know the volatility of relievers, Nestor, and some of the names that you threw out there. Yeah, bullpen pieces can be expensive, but you can also go sign bullpen pieces and they don't do the job for you. So there's so much volatility as it pertains to a bullpen. So I have no problem with that deal whatsoever when you are talking about the 37th overall pick. They drafted Slater DeBron with it, a high school outfielder who's intrigued. I mean, intrigued. We'll get into the draft as much as we're going to talk about it at some point.
I watched it on Sunday night. I
I mean,
mean, I
I'll
sat
say
and
this.
I don't know that I've sat and watched the baseball draft in my
Yeah,
life.
it's such an. I watched it too. It's such an odd event from looking through the lens of people just don't watch college baseball like they do college football or even
Nobody knows
college
who these guys
basketball,
are.
right? I mean, you could sit there and if you didn't know anything, if you just dropped in, you could be punked. Like it could be a Saturday Night Live skit where people just make up names and pick players, and you would
Like
just
an
be like,
AI
"Oh,
player.
yeah, exactly." But that said,
The Orioles select pitcher Sidney Finch
well, you know,
from the
don't get crazy. They're not going to take a pitcher too early. Although
Occoquan, Maine.
they did
Yes.
take a couple pitchers, 58 and 69 overall. So, but the point that I was trying to make with Baker, I think that's absolutely the case of a selling high situation. I wish nothing but the best for Brian Baker. I know he got to what, I guess they were in Boston. He got to Boston and actually gave
Got
it up
shelled,
for the
yeah.
Rays. But you
Well,
do
the
that.
Rays think he's going to help them win a World Series this year.
Or just be part of their bullpen for the next couple of years. But the
Well,
Orioles
help them win a World Series, part of their bullpen. That's what I mean. Like,
Well,
they
yeah.
feel like he's got 35 innings in him the second half of the year, and they're going to get their innings out of him, and they're going to get decent innings. That's the way they felt. They felt so strongly that they gave up I mean, the Rays giving up future stuff is crazy in
Yeah, I
division.
mean, the
It says to me that
37th.
they valued Baker more than the Orioles did, but I'm with you. It's so high. All it said to me was Mike Elias thinks he's keeping his job. Mike Elias thinks he's going to be around here when Sidney, whatever his name, that they drafted, is it. Triple A, and he's a decision, which is 3 years from now, right?
Oh, I mean, 3 years from now, I don't know about that, right? But I think, I mean, look, if you're Mike Elias, And this go this the same thing we said the same thing about Brandon Hyde. You know, we're going to say the same thing about, you know, anyone else that's in the organization right now. I mean, until the move's made, you're the guy, right? Until you're the guy until you're not anymore. We said that a lot about Brandon Hyde. I mean, you know, remember Mike Elias was giving him votes of confidence, even what up to about a week before the axe fell. So, you know, I'm not shocked looking at it through that lens. And the reality is, even if you're going to be fired, you want to do a good job that you get your next job, right? I mean, you don't want to do stuff that other teams are going to look at and say, what the heck are you doing? So I think the Baker trade, to me, you know, if that's, and it's always unique because it's only the competitive balance picks that a team's allowed to trade anyway. But the number 37 overall pick is not something to sneeze at. I mean, that's something that you hope is a player, right? I mean, that's not just a lottery ticket.
Gunnar
Like,
Henderson in your mind.
sure, or Jordan Westberg, right? Or the next Kobe
You think
Mayo.
you got a shot to have a major league player.
Sure, no question about it. So I think
And but Brian Baker is a major league player, by the way. So, you
he
know,
is.
part of that for me is if you're going to sit and say, we're trying to win, we're benching Mayo, we're
Yeah.
trying to win, we're trying to win, and then you deal off, you know, one of the two or three relief pitchers you actually have that you might need over the next 90 days, it tells me
Yeah.
you're a seller. And they
Well,
should be a seller. I'm not against even getting rid of
right.
Brian Baker. It was just, I'm trying to interpret what it
Yeah.
means. That's
Oh, I
all.
gotcha.
And I
Well,
think
and
we're going to be interpreting a lot of what it means over the next 16 days because they're going to deal off five of these guys.
yeah, and I think what we also, what it probably also should teach us is this trade deadline is not going to, quote, fix the Orioles for 2026, right? We've talked about that a lot. They're not going to get, Ryan O'Hearn is not a trade chip that's going to get you something that's necessarily going to be amazing for 2026. It might be something that can help you for 2026, and maybe it's another piece that really helps you a couple years from now, right? That's the kind of deal you're going to be looking at. You're not going to be looking at, you know, you're not going to replenish your farm system with guys that are top 50 guys across the league in terms of prospects, because Ryan O'Hearn and Cedric Mullins and, you know, whoever you want to throw out there, if you can trade Sagano, if you can trade Eflin, Sir Anthony Dominguez, I think Dominguez with his stuff profiles that you can get something. I don't, it's not going to, these aren't going to be elite prospects that are going to be coming back. So I think the Baker trade, yes, I agree with you. It does speak to where Mike Elias is operating, certainly, at least in a responsible way, that he's not trying to be a buyer on some kind of pipe dream that this team's going to sneak in as the third wild card. I think that's evident. But yeah, I think it, you know, you kind of look at it and say, you know, until he's told otherwise, whether ownership has definitively said it or not, and whether, you know, if ownership definitively says it or not, what does that even matter, right? I mean, we talk about how votes of confidence are the kiss of death in sports when we're talking about GMs and head coaches and managers. But, you know, to me, that was a appropriate, perfectly fine move to make. And if Slater DeBron ends up being a stud, then we're going to look at this and say, wow, you know, that was smart to do for dealing. Let's call Brian Baker what he is, a middle reliever, a good middle reliever this year, but a middle reliever nonetheless. So I think you that was a sell high kind of scenario. And yeah, I would be in agreement
It's a
with you.
lot of value for a middle reliever, and if you feel like you're throwing in the towel on the
For
season,
this season,
I'm
that's
all
fine.
for it.
Yeah,
And if it's a
exactly.
deal you couldn't make on Monday morning because the draft pick happened on Sunday night. So, I mean,
Exactly.
I get that, and I'm okay with that, but it does say to me Mike Elias feels safe. And I'll keep going back to
For at least
that
at least
anybody
this
that's calling
offseason.
for his head or thinks Rubenstein's going to fire him on October 3rd, I you know, it's not being built that way. Let's put it to you that
Yeah.
way.
Yeah, and again, I don't think this trade suggests that he's safe for the next 3 years or anything like that, but yeah,
He
I would
also
be.
loves draft picks, so this is fun for him. This
Yeah,
is the fun part of the job for
and
him.
it's the part of the job that, look, we can talk about the pitching element and not drafting pitchers. As I said to you in one of our last conversations a couple of weeks ago before I was off of my respite, they have trended the last couple drafts of drafting more pitching than they had in previous years. And then that trend continued Sunday night when they take pitch, you know, Joseph Gerwa, I think is the pronunciation, 58th overall, left-handed pitcher with, you know, some intriguing tools, and then a right-handed pitcher, JT Quinn, at
Dude, 6
69th
foot
overall.
eight.
I
That
mean, though,
the kid from Michigan State, 6 foot
yeah,
eight.
and again, look, I'm not going to sit here and say that I think that guy's going to be the next Tarek Skubal. Skubal was, I think, an eighth round pick, right? The whole point with the pitching was, for me, it's never been, oh, you need to take a pitcher in the first round, right? But because I feel like if you force that, that's when you draft Rashad Perriman, right? That's when you draft Travis Taylor, right? I mean, we think about it, like think about the Ravens with wide receivers in the first round over the years, right? If you draft for need, and you force it, you're going to end up making not great picks. So we're going to see how that plays
I
out.
took
And
two
again,
catchers in the first round, so that's interesting.
that was the interesting part to me. But even so, the Keith Laws of the draft, the draft community, the guys that really follow that, they seem to really like the Orioles draft. I don't know. I don't know these guys from Adam, right? I mean,
Dan
I
O'Dowd said they're killing it after
yeah.
they got their 31st pick,
And
so.
maybe they will, or 2 years from now, we'll be saying, oh, well, that draft stunk.
Well, they got
And
five players in the first 69 picks, right? So that and two pitchers. So they wound up taking more players. So on Monday morning, if this were the NFL, they would win the draft. They had three first round draft picks and a couple of twos. You come out, you got a safety, a corner, whoever you got, you feel like, hey, we got five of them, and everybody else got two or
Well,
less.
and I think the element and the element that I kind of take away from it, again, just I got home, I was catching up on everything from the week, and just watching the draft like everyone else. The comments that were being made by the pundits, right? And I am not a amateur draft pundit by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not pretending to be, but the pundits were making comments that reminded me of the types of things that NFL draft pundits say about the Ravens, looking at it through the lens of they got good value. Players that we thought were going to go earlier fell to them. I mean, I think Keith Law had Ike Irish as maybe the second or third overall pick in his last mock draft. And the Orioles get him at 19. I mean, good. That doesn't mean he's going to be a Hall of Famer, but that's good value as far as what here in
Well,
mid-July of
this is where if Mike
2025.
Elias were more personable and not an arrogant prick that I apparently he is, you'd have a vibe about his excitement to say, we just didn't think he was going to be there. Like, there's no way I thought over the last 3 months that Ike Irish was going to fall to us at 19. I thought he would go 12 to the Brewers or eight. Like, whatever that is, sit and educate us, sell us on your game. Sell us on your game. Your stadium's empty except when you're giving away stuff.
And I would actually say, and I don't mean this as a shot to you, Michael Elias has talked plenty about his draft picks and his farm system over the years. But it's most often come at times where the on-field major league product was so bad, going back to 19 and 20 and 21, that people weren't really paying attention at that point in time. So the time will come where he's gonna talk about these guys. I mean, Matt Blood, but was on a Zoom with the media late Sunday night talking about these guys. So they're excited. They're excited, but no one's buying tickets because you drafted Ike Austin, right? Or Ike Irish, sorry. We're gonna see. We'll see how these guys develop over the next few years. But yeah, all of this, whether we're talking about the Baker trade, how they proceeded in the draft. I mean, this draft, the first four picks that they made that weren't pitchers, which, the Keith Laws of the baseball draft community really liked, but fans said what? They didn't take a pitcher. They didn't take a pitcher. And I understand that to a point, but at the same time, you can't force it, right? You never should force it with the draft. We've talked about that so much with the Ravens over the years. The reason why the Ravens are the Ravens is because they haven't forced it over the years with the draft, by and large, right? We for every Matt Elam, Rashad Perriman kind of pick that they've made 10 other first round picks that were either good, great, or Hall of Fame level, right? So they're really good at what they do. And that's, and even though it's a different sport, the same principle applies. You want to stack your board and you want to stay true to it and you want to draft the best talent. And it's a little unusual, to draft two catchers with your first three picks, but you can't look at it through the lens of, no, we're not going to draft any catchers because we have Adley Rutschman and Samuel Basayo, because You don't know where you're going to be 2 years from now. Adley Rutschman may not be in the organization a year and a half from now. They might deal him this winter, whatever. Like it's pure conjecture. Samuel Basayo, we don't know if he's going to be a catcher long term. He might be a first baseman. He might be an all-star DH. In the Yordan Alvarez, David Ortiz mold. Long term. So you draft guys that you think have profiles that are going to translate, and you need to develop. I have more issues right now, more concerns with the Orioles from a development standpoint, more so than necessarily a talent identification standpoint. And you know why? A perfect example is Kyle Stowers in Miami right now, right? Why couldn't he do and unlock what he's done in Miami? Why couldn't he do that in Baltimore? Now, part of it was there wasn't an easy path to playing time. But there also was some development pieces there, right? We're seeing that now with Heston Kerstad, who's back in AAA and has struggled as he's trying to make
And
adjustments.
Kobe Mayo,
We're
who can't
seeing that
find
with,
the batter's box.
so for me, I kind of look at it more so that I don't necessarily have major problems with who Mike Elias has drafted, whom he's drafted. It's more so, what's kind of happened, what's broken down over the last year to 18 months from a player development standpoint that some of these guys either plateau or they get to triple A and the numbers look great and it just hasn't translated at the major league
Well,
level.
they
And
also haven't developed any pitching.
well,
That's the story. The story of this organization right now is the pitching they developed has been hurt or they haven't developed it.
yeah, I
And at
mean,
that point, that's why they're losing. I don't think it's because Gunnar Henderson's having a little bit of an off year that still feels like an all-star year, or that Westberg's been hurt, or that Kowser's been just okay or whatever. I think without the pitching, because the hitting, I think the hitting would have been better if the pitching were better. I mean, I think
I'll
part of
buy
this
that.
is just, they got shut out again on Saturday, you
Yeah.
mentioned, and then Stowers goes and really embarrasses them on Sunday. I mean, really puts an
I mean,
exclamation
good for
point
him.
down.
What a performance. And
I know you like him a lot, so I,
really nice kid. Really, he's easy to root for. I mean, I will say this, and I don't think too many Orioles fans have any ill will towards Kyle Stowers whatsoever. They wish he was still in Baltimore. He's a good kid, always worked hard, never really got a shot. And look,
And he was one of the guys, right?
he
He was
also.
one of the buddies with the guys, right?
I mean, everyone liked him. And also as a circumstance, right? I mean, when he was, quote, ready, they still had Austin Hayes, Cedric Mullins, and Anthony Santander in their outfield, right? I mean, who are you going out of your way to
And
get
coming off
rid
a
of?
101-win year where they felt
Correct.
like they, right, exactly, yeah.
So there's this is where there's more nuance involved, and that's why I've had frustration, but I also acknowledge that if you're in Mike Elias's shoes. Over the last couple of years, it has been tough to kind of find the sweet spot between, okay, you have this team that took off the second half of 2022 and won 101 games in 23 and had this great first half last year. And, so trying to find the sweet spot between maintaining that, but also sprinkling in, filtering in your next prospects, your next wave of guys, it worked out quite nicely with Colton Cowser last year. Why? Because Austin Hayes got hurt and Colton Cowser had to play and he took advantage. You were hoping the same thing was going to happen back in April and May when Colton Cowser was on the IL and Heston Kerstad had his extended audition. Unfortunately, Heston Kerstad did not take advantage of it whatsoever. So there's always more nuance. There's a little more of, it's a little more complicated than we try to make it out to be sometimes. And the saving grace at this point in time is as Kyle Stowers is going to the All-Star game, and good for him. I'm happy for him. On the flip side, I am encouraged by what I'm seeing from Trevor Rogers because I don't think it's what we've seen over these six starts. It doesn't feel fluky to me. It's not like he's getting by, hard contact and, his defense is playing great behind him and he's, kind of getting by the skin of his teeth. He's missing bats. His velocity's up. The stuff is better. He's giving you six and sometimes seven innings. I mean, it looks good. It looks like something that
Oh, it's a good trade at this point, no matter what Stowers did on
it
Sunday.
feels
If
better.
as I said to somebody on the Facebook thread, I'm like, if he's in their rotation next year and makes 28 starts and pitches under a 4 ERA,
I mean, that's
it's
John
a good
Means,
win.
right? I
It's a
mean,
good win.
that's what John Means was for you a few years ago. I mean, if he can be what John Means was before the injuries, You'll gladly take
You
that. And
better
look,
figure out five pitchers next year that can get
of
you
course.
26 to 30 starts, and you better figure out the bullpen because I'm with you, dude. Rutschman, Henderson, Westberg, Mayo, Couser, go down the line. Anybody curse that? Anybody else would get here in the offseason. If those guys are going to hit 230 and they're going to have zeros on Saturday afternoon after 27 outs, then
None
Trevor
of this is going to
Rogers
work.
pitching, four hit shutout ball for six innings doesn't mean anything. You're going to lose. So,
Yeah, I
and I
mean,
mean,
we.
Saturday was a little bit of a microcosm issue in that to say, like, you got this big effort from this guy you traded for a
And he's.
year ago in front of Kyle Stowers, and he did it against his team, and then Stowers won up it, and you lost both games over the weekend.
So, and look, I'm not sure there's a scenario where you're ever going to say that the Orioles won that trade based on what Kyle Stowers is becoming, assuming he continues this. And I'll also point out there have been plenty of players who have an all-star season and then they're never heard from them again.
By the
But
way, my dad, every time Don Baylor would come up to bat, my dad would just
he
shake his
did.
head and
Yeah, of
say,
course.
God, what were you thinking? Getting rid of him. And
But
at
you know
that point, it was
what?
about money and it was about free
Sure.
agency and type A, type B, all that in the 1970s. But every time Don Baylor would come up, my dad would be like, Grich, too. Oh, my dad never was a DeCinces guy because, like, no one was because of Brooks. But at Don Baylor, man, it was like, we could have used him
No
around here
doubt.
in 79 and
No
83.
doubt. No doubt. And but you also know, and your dad would also acknowledge too, and my dad would have too, every team has some of those, right? Every team has some players that they traded away that it ends up not
Every
working
time
out for them.
Scott McGregor and Rick Dempsey, did what they did, the Yankees really shouldn't have given them away.
I mean, look at Ryan O'Hearn for the Orioles. You know, after the Royals tried to develop
He
him and
was their
have.
casting curse stat, right?
I
Literally,
mean,
right?
he was never like an elite prospect, but he was a guy that they thought was going to be an everyday, like regular for them, and it never worked out, right? I mean, look at the Angels looking at Kyle Bradish before Tommy John. I mean, Kyle Bradish was one of what, four or five pitchers they dealt for Dylan Bundy, who didn't do anything meaningful for the Angels, right? I mean, so every team's going to have stuff like that. But if Trevor Rogers, to your point, and I wholeheartedly agree, if he can be a guy that can be a legit, I don't want to say anchor because that implies that he's going to be their ace. I don't think he's going to be their ace, but if he can be a legit starting pitcher for them the rest of this year, going into next year, and
If
however long
Trevor
he's an
Rogers
Oriole.
starts a playoff game in Baltimore, that means they made the
Sure. Okay,
playoffs,
great.
and that means he takes the hill, then that would have been a good trade. To trade Stowers and Norby, who are, major league players, right? If nothing else, and Stowers looks like he's going to be in the big leagues. He's here to stay now. Even if it slows down, he only hits
Yeah, even if
247
he's
with
not an
15 bombs
all-star
next
again,
year,
right.
in that organization, he's going to get his 512 at bats every year, right?
So you can look at it through the lens of if Trevor Rogers, if what we're seeing now is real, and I think there are plenty of signs to believe. Not and let me be clear, not a 1.5 ERA. I'm not saying that he's going to be that, but if he can be a guy that is a 3-something ERA of the rest of this year and next year and however long after that, if however long he sticks around, then I think you look at that trade much differently through the lens of, okay, you give Miami the nod because, Kyle Stowers, all-star outfielder, but you did get Trevor Rogers. And even though his initial time with the Orioles didn't work out well,
He looks like Dallas Keuchel right now for 5 minutes with the Astros, right?
well,
Like,
what's crazy? I mean, you look at it, and again, it's only been six starts. But if you look at some, wins above replacement, things of that nature, he's been their best starting pitcher, right? I mean, that's how good he's been. So, again, I get it. It's no fun seeing Kyle Stowers hit three home runs and have five hits against the Orioles on Sunday when you're looking at it through that lens and knowing how little Trevor Rogers had done. Not how little, nothing he had done to help the Orioles until last month. But a trade shouldn't just be judged solely on the first year. Just like we're not going to judge these draft picks solely on where Baseball America rates them right now, because that's not worth anything in the big picture. So you have to see how it plays out. And the good news is, Trevor Rogers looks like someone that can really help them next year. And you're hoping that, whether that projects as number two, number three, number four starter, whatever, it feels like he's going to be in that starting five. And if he is, then not that you're going to do cartwheels over the Kyle Stowers trade, but it's at least a little more palatable, right? You can at least look at it and say, all right, yeah, they whiffed on Kyle Stowers and they need to learn from that. And that's why that's kind of the genesis of some of my frustration right now, seeing how they're handling Kobe Mayo, who actually had a pretty nice, decent month of June and has barely played in July. So to me, it's more so, all right, learn from what happened with Kyle Stowers, right? You can't change it, but learn from it and figure this out, clear the deck here. A little bit with, trading O'Hearn or trading Mullins, and that puts, Couser in center field, and that puts someone who might be DHing into the outfield, and then you could DH Mayo, whatever. You got to find out, right? That these next two and a half months are not going to be about the Orioles trying to sneak into wild card contention. They're gonna sell off, right? They need to find out about these guys. They need to see Trevor Rogers do this, continue to do this for the next 2.5 months. They need to see Kobe Mayo. Looked the part of someone that you say, hey, maybe we're not just going to hand him 160 starts next year, but we feel good enough to say he's going to be on our roster and he's going to have the inside track on being our starting first baseman, because we're probably going to non-tender or trade Ryan Mountcastle at some point between now and spring training next year. But you need to find out. You want to get Samuel Basayo here by August, third week of August, and let him play for 4 or 5 weeks, catch a couple times a week, play some first base, DH. So again, that's where, to me, trading Ryan O'Hearn is as much about clearing some runway for some of those things as it is whatever you're going to get for him. And, if it all shakes out that Ryan O'Hearn, who's going to be a free agent, is available in the offseason, and you can try to re-sign him if you want to, right? If you think he's that important to you. They did it with Mike Bordick 25 years ago. That scenario does exist if you think it's going to be that important. But for me, I'm hoping that Kobe Mayo playing every day looks the part of a guy that you say, all right, this season stunk. This season was a disappointment, but he's trending up as the year winds down. In the same way we're talking about Jordan Westberg, who, say what you want about the hand injury and sliding headfirst in the second base and all that. But since he's been back from the hamstring, Westberg's been fantastic at the plate, right? I mean, he's looked much more like the all-star that he was last year. So that's been good to see. Gunnar Henderson's been way better over the last 5 or 6 weeks compared to what he was the first 2 months of the season. We're going to see about Adley Rutschman, who, hopefully is going to be back not too long after the all-star break.
Well, let's break and come back, because there's a lot of players to go through
Oh,
here.
sure.
Luke has been gone a week. Luke has a tan. He's in Wildwood. I have a silver beard because I haven't shaved since Wang Chung, I feel like, or maybe since the Heritage Fair. Luke can be found at Baltimore. Luke, anywhere the internet travels. I can be found this week in two places. It's going to be in Eldersburg out at 1623 Brewing on Wednesday. Luke, there was a little concert held. I know you were barely alive back on July 13th, 1985. It was the 40th anniversary of Live Aid in Philadelphia. I attended that show. My friends, Richard and David Abrahams, were two of my best friends in the whole world in 1985. They flew over to London together as brothers and went to Live Aid. They're going to bring their trinkets. I'm going to bring my trinkets. We're going to meet at 1623 Brewing. Also going to be joined out at 1623 Brewing by some other rock and roll friends, John Allen from Charm City Devils and Stone Horses, but more importantly, Child's Play is going to join me out there for a beer as well. On Friday, we're waking up early in the morning. We're going to be at Zeke's Coffee. Dan Rodericks is going to be joining us. Kevin Kelleher, who is Cal, the fired cartoonist, political cartoonist from the Baltimore Sun, working for the Smith family. So going to be an interesting morning of coffee down at Zeke's Coffee on Friday. Resig will also be with us, another former Baltimore Sun employee. All it brought to you by our friends at the Baltimore, or excuse me, the Maryland Lottery, Back to the Future scratch-offs. I got to get some new scratch-offs because we're about this close to getting the Ravens scratch-offs coming in a couple of weeks in Ravens season. I don't want to bring that up with Luke because that's a whole different segment that Ravens training camp opens next week. So this week, next week, what do we got? We calling it? You calling it this week or next week?
Next week. Next week. The
You'll feel better
22nd.
about it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it's almost this week. It's a week away. I am Nestor. He is Luke. Stay with us. We got a lot of baseball around here. It's All-Star Break week. I have found some cool old stuff that I've also played, and also some really cool new stuff. We had a great, great visit with Johnny O last week, our congressman out of Costas and Timonium. Also had a great, great visit last week all around with the De Pasquale's family and sausage and fun and Pete Carangi. It's been a big, big week around here. I'm Nestor. He's Luke. Stay with us. He's back. We got last place baseball and All-Star game to talk about and all that good stuff. We're Baltimore Positive.